Hi, folks. This is Darrell Waltrip, a NASCAR analyst on Fox, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
Well, I left Kentucky back in 49 and went to Detroit working on assembly line. The first year they had me putting wheels on Cadillac.
720 WGN, on the road with Dane, high atop Chicagoland in the Skyline studio. And this is the kind of thing, you know, one of the, and we'll say it all the time, is that as far as racing goes, sometimes the tracks are as big as stars as the drivers themselves. And tonight is the Bristol Night Race. And we wanted to get somebody on that could talk a little bit about some of this, and excited to have, honored to have with him. You know him as an Xfinity Series champion, Rookie of the Year in the Monster Energy Cup, longtime great analyst over there at ESPN, and now part of that incredible Fox NASCAR team. It is the one and only Ricky Craven. Ricky, welcome to WGN.
Dane, thank you.
So this is kind of a big night, you know, because this is one of those things, and we mentioned a little bit in the intro, is that the tracks are as big as stars, and outside of maybe Daytona or maybe Indianapolis, right? You know, it's Bristol is one of those places that not only fans love, that I think it's great for TV, the visuals are great, but the drivers are so excited about it too.
You know, forever, the Big Four would be considered Daytona 500, the Coke 600, the Southern 500, and then the Brickyard 400, and that's just by generally speaking, by measure, and from the fans and the drivers and the owners and the sponsors. And but in the last couple of decades, Bristol has become among the most significant races, the Bristol Night Race, of all drivers, and it's like this is the next generation's driver's favorite race. It's Saturday night under the light and extreme action.
You know the action is there, and they're going to be bumping, and it's the kind of visuals, right? You can see everything going on. It's all laid out in front of you. But, Ricky, you mentioned it, and is it kind of, and this is a sport that needs to constantly do it on an individual basis from the track's marketing. You look at Darlington, the way that they've sort of kind of branded that throwback weekend, and then you've got Bristol. Is it just that they've been so great? Not only is it a fun time, and I think it's, you know, there's a lot on the line and fans love it, but have they just been great at kind of marketing the experience at Bristol?
Yeah, they certainly have, Dane. It's an atmosphere that is like no other. It's late in the summer. Kids are getting ready to go back to school. It might be the last trip the family makes. The camping's phenomenal in the mountains of Tennessee, and the race because it's so crazy fast, 14, 15 second laps. The race itself is unpredictable, very volatile, and drivers don't have time to regain the composure when if they get bumped or they feel like they got moved out of the way, moved up the racetrack. A lot of retaliation, and I think that it's Saturday night, right? And you know, you stay up late and sleep in tomorrow. Drivers even feel that way.
Now, the drivers on the strategy side, you know, it's different than almost any other place, right? Because there is so much kind of bumping and grinding, and you mentioned tempers flare, and so there's a lot of things that you can't necessarily plan for in advance. But as a driver who's been there doing it, like, what is kind of this? Is the strategy just to kind of, like, survive and be there at the end? How does it work?
Yeah, I think back to when I raced in this event, and being under the lights, you think, you know, there would be some dynamic of, you know, maybe a little more difficult to see your perception or peripheral vision. But because of the concrete and how well lit it is, I remember competing there in this event and thinking, you really don't know the difference between day and night. It's almost illuminated. But it's a long day, and I will say that even though, you know, you think, well, the drivers could sleep in or what, it doesn't work that way. You know, drivers stay, they live at every racetrack. Each week their bus goes from track to track, and it's very difficult to sleep in at a racetrack. So by 8 o'clock when the race starts, it makes for a long day. And as I said a moment ago, retaliating at Bristol is almost like a common reaction. And you don't see that at Talladega. You don't see it at Daytona, the big tracks, but you certainly see it at the half-mile track of Bristol.
Well, here's the other side of it, too, is just everything is so compact. You mentioned tempers, kind of flares. There's no real way to get away and kind of decompress or escape. And everything, if you look at those aerial photos, everything is so jammed up. I think a little bit later on in the show, we're going to have Doug Bowles, president of Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And they've got, I think, 270 acres in the infield, some holes of golf, a dirt track. They got all the room in the world. But talk a little bit about how everything is just so kind of condensed. The fans are on you, but you guys are jam-packed in the middle there.
Yeah, it's just crazy. I mean, it's just a completely different environment. You feel contained. There's very little margin for error. I could try to take you from a visual perspective around the track, but imagine you know you're full throttle running down into the corner, and you lift off the gas and apply the brakes almost at the same exact time. You're synchronized for doing that twice a lap for 500 laps, so 1,000 times. When you slam into the banking, you feel like you're going down through the bottom of the race car. The compression is enormous, more than any other track that we compete at. And when you feel that compression and the lateral force, the loads against you, you know you have to go back to the accelerator. And you squeeze that accelerator down, and you just wonder, am I going to make it off the corner without slamming the wall? You're measuring yourself to the wall. You release the wheel. You're spinning the rear tires. And you only have about a second and a half where you have the wheel straight. And then you're heading into turn three and doing it all over again. Now, that's all by yourself, Dane. Imagine putting 39 other cars right. around you
right.
and the risks that are involved with that.
Oh, it's everything is happening, but it is one of those, it's a high profile event. And of course, everything's on the line as we get towards kind of the edge of the season where people are starting to kind of look where they are in contention for the playoffs. What are your thoughts? Having been, and we'll talk a little bit about the transition to Fox, how it's been. You've been doing an amazing job, all year, but so who do you like, I guess, really? Who has a chance or who needs it, right? And what do you think you'll see?
So the drivers with the most experience and the drivers you'd think are best equipped for this would be Clint Bowyer, Jimmy Johnson, right on the bubble, just barely in, just barely out. Ryan Newman is in the hunt, and you know, he has that same level of experience. But I think that they have a different degree of pressure because the world expects them to advance, and they, you know, great teams, great organizations. I'm looking at Daniel Suarez. In fact, I said it on Fox week after week. Daniel Suarez, I think, has the wind to his back because he really has – he's never won a race, a cup race, and by all measure, it would be an upset for him to do this. He's been running better than any of the other drivers that are on the bubble in the last few weeks, and I think he's poised for an upset.
So Daniel Suarez, that's great. Well, he's got, you know, some great equipment now with Stuart Haas, and so he's in there. I wanted to ask you a little bit, and this is a guy that maybe got a chip on his shoulder, you know, winded his back maybe just from an inspirational, motivational kind of situation, is Matt DiBenedetto. And this is a guy,
yeah,
you always
right.
love those stories when you see somebody that's, you know, got the talent, they get in there, they get some decent equipment. Decent is really all I'm saying. It could be better, but he's really come to shine, and he qualify seventh, I think, for tonight?
Yeah. And Dane, he's a great story. He's a great story. Unfortunately, the story maybe had a surprise chapter this week, and the team announced that Matt wouldn't be invited back, that they were going to make a driver change. He's shown steady progress. He's been very encouraging the last 6 weeks, run better than he ever has in his career. And it might be a stretch to say that he could win in the next few weeks, but he has had top five finishes, and he's among the most positive people I've ever been around. He's very, very enthusiastic about his opportunities, and hopefully he lands on his feet off season. But you know, he's got 13 races left this year to continue to to impress people.
Kind of make that statement. He's great on social media. He's super active there. Like you said, he's got top fives, top tens. I think he led the most laps in the Daytona 500. So from the talent side, he's proven that he can do it. And like you said, too, it's a great story. And you hope that he, you know, can get out there and you know, kind of maybe this is a, you know, one door closing and another one, maybe even a better one opening. So we're going to definitely be pulling for him. I think he's got a lot of fans there. So here's the other side of it, too. We wanted to ask you is how's it been, you know, the transition to Fox? It's been great. You know, seeing your work all year long there. And of course, you've got a lot of that great equipment, part of that amazing team. And so does it feel comfortable? You feel like you're fully Fox now, right?
Yeah, I enjoy it. It's I have fun with people I'm close to that ask me the same question. I say, you know, I'm 53 years old, and making the transition to Fox has rewarded me in a number of ways. One of them, I'm able to drive to work. For the first time in my life, I'm able to drive to work. I've been getting on an airplane my entire adult life. And, of course, with ESPN, I had to fly to Connecticut every weekend. This has been great. And, you know, I really enjoy the team. I'm comfortable with all the people because I've had a connection with them in the garage area for years. And there's a load of talent that back us up at the studio.
Yeah, you mentioned the talent there. 11 years at ESPN, and now over there with Fox. You're on. Yeah, what I think is it's kind of like the Yankees when it comes to, you know, the motorsports coverage and a lot of the things that they do. So congratulations there. You mentioned the car. I wanted to ask you about this. You're driving to work now. You used to take a plane, and for the listeners out there that may not be super familiar, you know, this is for NASCAR. Everybody travels to whatever location. Every single, you know, kind of personality in the series and the multiple series travel every week to wherever it is that they're doing it. And a lot of it happens on planes. A lot of it's on some of those the smaller planes, the private jets and things like that. What was your thought? And I'm sure you've spent a lot of time on those kinds of planes as well with Dale Jr. landing there. At first, when they first said, hey, you know, they overshot the runway and everybody's fine and no injuries at all, you thought it was no big deal. You look at that video and wow.
Yeah, it made me sick to my stomach. I really couldn't believe the headline. And I had somebody text me the headline rather than call me. So when I saw that headline, it made me sick to my stomach. Dale Jr. and his family involved in a plane crash, but it's what a blessing for it to have turned out the way it did. It's just the odds are ridiculous. You know, just hard to imagine. And I think, you know, there's got to be some trauma for Dale and his wife, the pilots. You know, I can't even describe to you the number of people and the number of aircraft that are in the air because of our industry.
Yep.
How dependent we are getting from point A to point B, and honestly, how you take it for granted. I guess you always look at the weather, because if you fly as much as we do, you always get yourself in a storm. You're eventually going to get yourself in a storm that you just kind of pray you can get out of. But that's really it. You know, I don't think much. I guess you know the risks with taking off and landing, but when you're flying, you're always doing other things. You're always catching up. You're using that time, because it's very peaceful in the air, to catch up on some extra work and notes and research. But you don't think about these scenarios, but then they become reminders that, you know, anytime you're dependent on mechanical equipment, there's risk.
Yeah, and especially with the smaller airports that a lot of the private jets and those smaller aircraft go to, it's not like you have like a full-blown, you know, fire department ready to do. They didn't have any kind of distress call in the beginning. And I think as drivers, you guys, you know, you kind of accept, and I think we as fans and people who cover the sport accept there's an inherent risk that you could, you know, get in an accident and bad things could happen, you know, from a car crash. But you don't necessarily factor in, you know, the whole family and the dog and the kid and the thing. And so, and right, if I was him, I'd almost want to do the whole John Madden thing. Remember, he used to always take the tour bus, the Madden Cruiser, because you know what? It just seems crazy.
Dane, you know, you make an excellent point that as a race car driver, you associate the risks associated with your profession and you accept them. You know, you're going 200 miles an hour. You're running up against a wall. There's, you know, there's so many scenarios that that you expose yourself to. But you do take the aircraft and the flying for granted. I'll say this, that I owned a plane. I leased a plane, similar to what Dale Jr. had the situation this past week. And, you know, you're dependent on the professionals sitting up front. The one thing that I think maybe is a little more at risk with private aircraft is that sometimes you do slide in and out of airports. Like in this case, I think it was 4,500 feet. There's not a lot of room for error there. That, you know, like I grew up in Maine, and a lot of times when I flew back to Maine, I had a summer home there. We would fly into Bangor, and I think that airport was like a half mile long. I'm sorry, it was like 3 miles long, and it was just an enormous international airport there. But when you're flying out in and out of racetracks, or you try to get as close to the track as you can, sometimes those runways are short, relatively speaking.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing, it's just the nature of the business, like you mentioned, just having everybody kind of have to kind of mobilize and get where they're going. And you talked about, you know, all of those planes that are involved in the sport of racing and how they're constantly flying week in and week out. So I wanted to ask you before we let you go, how are you going to be enjoying the race tonight? Do you sit there? Do you have sort of a command center, you know, where you're maybe doing some social media, just, you know, do you make some popcorn and kind of say, are you tailgating? What are you going to do? What does a Ricky Craven do to enjoy Bristol Night Race?
So, as you know, NBC took over midway through the year in July, and I don't have the heavy lifting that I would normally have. So I'm going to watch this race from the comfort of home, more like from a fan's perspective.
Yeah.
And I can't rule out having a big bowl of popcorn or maybe even a cold beer, but I'm going to enjoy the race. This is a fun race to watch. I can tell you that it wasn't always the most fun to compete in.
Oh,
there were a number of times where I was whistling along thinking, this is my night, this is my night, and a wreck happens on the front stretch, and you try to slow down and get wiped out on the back stretch. Like, there's so many ways to lose a race at Bristol just because of all the things we described earlier. It is such a congested form of racing.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. Whoever's going to win, we're going to see that. I think the fans and you, Ricky Craven, us, of course, and all of our listeners are winners to be able to sit back, relax, and enjoy it on television tonight. And so where can people catch up with you? I know on the social media side, if you want to give out some of that so people can keep up with your adventures as you're kind of going through, you know, all of your observations on the racing side.
Yeah, my Twitter account, and I know it's crazy, I think 50,000 followers, but I don't even remember my Twitter account. I mean, I think just freaking crazy.
That's be nice.
But anyway,
we'll have a link.
Yeah,
up.
Yeah. So I'm. I enjoy reading the social media probably more than I enjoy participating in it because it. I think it adds an element to watching the race or watching any event that. It just gives it a whole another element, right? It's pretty cool. And the fact that fans can weigh in.
Yeah, it's great stuff, and so much great stuff is happening over there on Fox with Race Hub and Ricky Craven. You are a great addition to that Fox team, and so excited to have you on to talk a little bit about racing in general, Bristol in general, and, of course, some of the dynamics that happen in and around the racing world. So we're going to let you get back to it, get the popcorn popping, and thanks for jumping on the show today.
Dane, have a great weekend. I look forward to the next time we can connect.
All right. Thanks. So Ricky Craven, and of course, he's going to be watching along with us. We're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to take another quick break. Then we're going to send it to News on the Road, 720 WGN.